Hey there, hip cats. This is your friendly neighborhood Cinnamon Badge, and you are listening to the July 2007 FIA podcast. This month's theme is fluff, so I hope you've all packed your toothbrush and dental floss. It doesn't get much sweeter than this. Before we get to the fluffy goodness, I'd like to extend best birthday wishes to some of our archive members. On the 2nd is Alluring Twilight's birthday. The 11th is Maybe September XX. The 16th is our resident site techie, Lindsay. The 22nd is Sally Ann 22. The 27th is Eliaru. The 29th is Jessica. The 30th is Stick of Gum and Calbell. And on July 31st, happy birthday to J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter. I hope everyone born in July has a fantastic birthday and gets lots of presents and cake. July news and announcements. Do I even need to say it at this point? The 5th Potter film, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, will open in Australia, Canada, Italy, and the States on July 11th, in Argentina, Britain, and Germany on July 12th, and in Norway, Finland, Mexico, and the Philippines on July 13th. I hope that covers everyone's worldwide location. I think it does, but if not, you can find a complete list of release dates at imdb.com. And the long-awaited 7th book, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, will be released on July 21st. Rowling has reported that the 7th book is longer than Half-Blood Prince, but shorter than Order of the Phoenix, so we'll all be terribly busy come the 21st of the month, I'm sure. Too busy to mow the lawn or wash the windows or do other pesky chores like that, because we'll all be inside reading. The Draco Ginny Fic Exchange is in the midst of posting the art and fics submitted for this round, so everyone is encouraged to go check them out and leave feedback for the artists and authors. There's some great stuff posted there. And finally, voting for the Quill to Parchment Awards ends July 4th, with the winners being posted on the 7th, so make sure you get your votes in on time. This month's fics are sure to get everyone out of the depths of despair they likely reached after listening to last month's angst fest of bracketed doom. The fics include A Bit of Silk by CCC, Pretty as You Please by Nokomis, Kissing Booth by Saraya Okalani, The Infirmary by Persephone 33, The Different Days of Draco Malfoy by Heart's Cadence, and my own Happiness Quota. The fics are all rated not naughty, with the exception of A Bit of Silk and Kissing Booth, which are both rated sorta naughty. None of these stories have warnings, unless, of course, you count fluffiness something to be warned about, and sometimes it is. Happiness Quota was written for Rain Puddle and is dedicated to everyone who cried over Lockhart's principle. And Draconis and Ginevra, and, well, let's just say it's for anything I've ever written, ever. Happiness Quota by Cinnamon Badge. Draco Malfoy had a philosophy on happiness, and he was convinced for a long time that it was the only truth he could count on in his often confusing, contradictory life. He believed that each person was born with a certain amount of joy predestined in their lives, a quota, if you will. Some people had small joys throughout their life, some a handful of really great ones, interspersed through their personal timeline. Some people used up their happiness quota at a young age and lived the rest of their lives miserable, while some had the reverse. It was the only way he could explain why it seemed that life was unfair, and some people had everything while others suffered. When he was 16, and staring down his wand at Professor Dumbledore atop Hogwarts' tallest tower, he became convinced that he had used up his happiness quota. As the war progressed, nothing dissuaded him from this idea. He and his mother went into hiding, and all he heard was about his dying friends, his captured father, the losses suffered by the side he was ostensibly on. His childhood had been a happy one, and he had had his own small triumphs against Scarhead and his confederates. Now he was doomed to spend the rest of his life in sorrow. He remained convinced until, by chance, circumstance, or fate, he was injured in the course of what turned out to be the final battle. Draco hadn't been able to stand by and watch anymore, and had joined the Order in exchange for their help in keeping his mother safe. Yaxley had clipped him with a vicious hex, and Draco had blacked out, only to wake hours later in the medical tent with Ginny Weasley leaning over him. "We won," she said simply, and she'd grinned when he released a relieved breath. That had been the start of his happiness returning, in bits and pieces. He began feeling a delighted little swoop in his stomach whenever Ginny came into sight, and he smiled more easily when she was around. They were nearly inseparable, to everyone else's chagrin, and the fact that Ginny didn't care what they thought thrilled him. She had jump-started his happiness somehow, with her sarcastic smirk so like his own, and her gorgeous red hair, and her dry sense of humor. And Draco's heart had jolted when, on the first anniversary of the day Scarhead took down the Dark Lord, he found himself snogging her at a celebratory party at the Leaky Cauldron. Evidently he'd been wrong before. He had not run out of happiness in his life, for he felt happier with each passing day he spent with Ginny. His quota must have been greater than he'd first thought, but Draco was now convinced that it would run out soon. Ginny just made him feel so happy and so wonderful that there was no way it would last much longer. As upset as that made him feel, he knew that every minute he spent with Ginny would be worth it. When they officially became a couple, he remained steady in his belief that it would come to an end soon. He determined to live every second to its fullest, and he knew Ginny couldn't believe he was the same Draco Malfoy that had mercilessly teased her brothers at Hogwarts, giving her such romantic treatment. When Ginny agreed to marry him 2 years later, and Draco thought his happiness would burst with joy, at the back of his mind was the niggling thought that his happiness quota might be up. On their wedding day, as Ginny walked down the aisle in her white gown lovelier than he had ever seen her, Draco thought that finally he must have reached his predetermined limit. One man alone couldn't possibly deserve to be this ecstatic, not even if he had done 1,000 good deeds, and Draco hadn't done nearly that many. But it persisted. For their first Christmas together as a married couple, Ginny had given him a small box that, when opened, yielded a pair of tiny white booties. She was pregnant. Draco was over the moon. The following July, as he held his tiny son Daniel for the very first time, he couldn't believe the sheer joy and love that washed over him. "You're perfect," he whispered, as Daniel blinked up at him through clear blue eyes. "You're beautiful." Even then, he was certain of his teenage philosophy. 2 years after Daniel was Elliot, followed by Nicholas 3 years after that, Draco became madly in love with the sight of his wife pregnant, and even more madly in love with the amazing sons they had made together. But there had to be a catch somewhere in all of his happiness, and he determinedly kept a sharp eye out for it. After Nicholas was Sophie, the girl they had wanted for so long, Ginny looked radiant with her sweaty hair and flushed skin, propped up with mounds of pillows in their bed as she held their daughter. "You're going to be Daddy's little girl, aren't you?" she cooed to Sophie, who gave her a bored, patent Malfoy look. Draco and Ginny both laughed. And she was. Sophie was Draco's princess, and as she grew older, the strong bond between them strengthened. Ginny teased him for years when she caught moisture in his eyes on the day that they sent Sophie off for her first year at Hogwarts. Draco hotly denied it, knowing that, at last, his happiness quota had come to an end. His children were all out of the house, away at school, growing up so fast that when Daniel came home with his apparition license, Draco had to double-check that he was actually old enough for it. The years went inexorably on, marching forward in their ceaseless way, and one by one the children left Hogwarts and started up their own lives, with friends and partners and their own flats. This was the end, or so Draco thought. His heart wrenched as he watched Sophie take all of her possessions with her as she moved into a flat in Hogsmeade. This was the point at which his quota was fulfilled, and the rest of his life would be lived in sadness. Daniel met his future wife, Cassandra, when they were both 27, and he proposed to her after they had been only dating 8 months. Draco didn't think much of Cassandra at first. She was stealing his oldest son from him, after all. But the more he got to know her, the more he realized that Daniel had better taste than he gave him credit for. Cassandra was a wonderful girl, and she adored Daniel. They would be very happy together. As they sat at the reception after the wedding, Ginny humming along to the music as Daniel and Cassandra danced their first dance together, Draco heaved a sigh. "It won't get better than this," he said. "How can we be this happy now and have any left over for later?" Ginny grinned at him and slid her hand into his. "But Draco," she said, "it's only just begun. Now that Daniel's settled, we've got Elliot to worry about, and Nicholas, and Sophie." "Sophie's too young to get married," Draco said immediately. Jenny laughed. She is now, but she won't always be. And you know what happens once everyone's happily married off? Miserable, lonely old age, he said, shrugging. She chuckled again. No, you prat. Grandchildren. Grandchildren come next. Draco perked at that. Evidently his wife was more intelligent than he'd given her credit for as well. How could he be anything but thrilled when Daniel presented him with his first grandchild? There was no end in sight to his happiness, and Draco had a feeling it was as boundless as he wanted it to be. He decided then and there that he would stop looking for a catch, because if Ginny said there wasn't one, he was inclined to agree with her. That quota business was mostly bollocks anyway.
A Bit of Silk by CCC. Ginny Weasley stared at the leopard print thong that she had just pulled out of her underwear drawer. She tried to come up with a reason that it might be there. Maybe one of her teenage boys had started cross-dressing. She summoned a house elf and asked, "Where did this come from?" Tilly replied, "I found them in Zachary's room." Ginny took a deep breath as she wondered whether she'd enjoy spending time lingerie shopping with her son. "Did you find any other women's things in his room?"
"No, that's the only misplaced item I found."
Ginny nodded. "Thank you, Tilly. That is all." The house elf disappeared, and Ginny tried to come up with a reason that the thong would be in her house. Unfortunately, the only viable conclusion she could come to was that her husband was a lying, cheating bastard. Ginny tossed the offensive bit of silk back into the drawer and slammed it shut. She pressed the palms of her hands to her eyes and prayed that when she opened the drawer, she would see only the normal bikini knickers that she'd been wearing for the last 20 years. Taking a deep breath, she opened the drawer and was immediately assaulted by the small scrap of leopard skin silk that was lying on top of her respectable knickers. Was that why Draco was cheating on her? Was her underwear boring? He never complained. He told her that her arse had not gotten bigger after the birth of their two sons, and Merlin, how she loved him for that lie. Apparently, however, he knew the truth about her arse, because he was now shagging someone with an arse much smaller than her own. Growling in frustration, Ginny grabbed a pair of knickers out of the drawer and stomped off to the shower. Maybe, after the shower, she would know what to do. 20 minutes and a good cry later, Ginny had a plan. She charmed her face so that Blaze Zabini wouldn't be able to tell she had been crying, and then walked over to the fireplace, threw in some flue powder, and called his name. Blaze's face appeared in the flames. He took one look at Ginny and asked, "What did he do now?" Ginny took a deep breath and said, "I need you and Daphne to take the boys for tonight." Blaze sighed. "Is it bad?" Ginny growled, "You might want to prepare a guest room for Draco while you're at it." "Just remember, it might not be as bad as you think." Ginny frowned. "I'm afraid it might be worse. If it comes down to it, could I stay with you and the girls for a while?" "Of course. Daphne, LaSalle, Zelda, and I would love to have you stay with us. We love Draco, but we know he can be impossible. Send the boys over for now, and then wait to see what Draco has to say before you jump to any conclusions, all right?"
"Thank you,"
was all Ginny said before she cut the connection. Trying to put on a happy face, she walked towards her boys' rooms. She found 14-year-old Zachary in his room reading a Quidditch magazine.
"You're going to stay at the Zabinis tonight."
Zachary looked up with a smile. "Cool. LaSalle is a wicked flyer." Ginny smiled at her youngest son. She was mildly surprised at the easy friendship he had developed with LaSalle. The girl was 3 years older, but they both seemed to have a passion for flying. She found Devon in the parlor reading a book. "Devon, you'll be staying the night at the Zabinis." Devon stared at his mother for a moment before he asked, "How much trouble is father in?" Ginny frowned. Devon was far too perceptive for his 17 years. He always knew when trouble was brewing between his parents.
"It's nothing too big," Ginny lied.
Devon nodded and went back to his book.
An hour before their father was due home, Jenny hustled the boys through the flue to the Zabinis. Daphne informed her that she and Blaze had arranged for a barbecue since the summer evening was so lovely. Jenny was grateful that the boys would be entertained. With an hour left to wait, Jenny decided to fix herself up. She rarely bothered with elaborate makeup anymore. When she had finished with the makeup charm, she looked in the mirror and smiled. She still looked good. If Draco wanted to chase some floozy with a small arse, then maybe she'd just find some entertainment on the side for herself. The thought made her smile for about 1 minute, and then she grabbed her wand and removed the charms. Either he wanted her for herself, or he didn't want her at all. Jenny walked into the parlor and sat down to wait. Draco apparated into the room and smiled at Jenny. When she didn't smile back, he said, "Oh, hell, what's wrong? Are the boys all right?" "The boys are fine," Jenny confirmed as she pulled the thong out of her pocket and tossed it at his feet. "You, however, are a dead man." Draco looked at what Jenny had tossed at his feet. "Am I supposed to know what that is?" Jenny glared at him.
"Pick it up."
Draco bent down and picked up the bit of silk. He looked at the knickers and then looked at his wife. "Where did these come from?"
"They came from whatever piece of trash you were shagging in my house," Jenny yelled.
Draco looked at her. "Have you lost your mind?"
"No, apparently I've just lost your interest," Jenny retorted.
Draco rubbed his hand across his face and took a deep breath before he asked, "Why am I late to work several mornings a week?" Jenny shrugged but didn't respond. "I am late, you crazy woman, because I stay in bed with you too long. I have not lost interest in you. Where is this coming from?" Jenny sputtered.
"It's coming from those damn knickers!"
Draco walked forward and looked into his wife's eyes. "I swear on my name as a Malfoy that I have never seen these knickers before. I am not cheating on you. I swear it." Jenny still looked at him with suspicion, and Draco cursed. "Damn it all, let me prove it to you, although my word should be good enough." Draco pulled out his wand and muttered a spell to show who the owner of the item was. The name, Lascelle Zabini, shimmered in the air. "See? They belong to Lascelle. I'm not that surprised. She and Devon have been spending time together since they were children. They are the same age. It's a good match." Jenny frowned. "Tilly said they came from Zachary's room." Draco tried to hide his smile, but he couldn't. "Zachary and Lascelle. I am impressed. She's 3 years older than him." Jenny burst into tears, and Draco looked at her. "What is wrong now?"
"Zachary is my baby. He can't be. It's just wrong."
Draco walked forward and hugged his wife. "Darling, your baby is a foot taller than you." Jenny sniffled.
"That Sabini girl took advantage of him."
Draco chuckled as he held his wife. "Jenny, I am quite sure that Zachary did not mind whatever Lascelle did with him. Now that I think about it, those two are normally off racing brooms somewhere while Devon and Zelda chat in the parlor about what books they've been reading."
"It's just wrong,"
Jenny muttered into Draco's shirt. "Can I assume that you are no longer mad at me?" Draco asked in a light tone. Jenny glared at him.
"You are forgiven."
Draco snorted. "You realize I didn't do anything to be forgiven for, don't you?" Jenny poked him in the chest.
"Yes, you did. You passed on those Malfoy genes to my boys. Now older girls are going to chase them around."
"I accept total responsibility for that. You know they are better off than if they took after your brothers. I don't think Ron got Granger in the sack until our last year at Hogwarts." Jenny snorted.
"That shows what you know."
"Oh, you're right. Granger probably threw him down on a table in the library and shagged him senseless out of sheer sexual frustration. Poor girl probably had to tutor him in that as well."
Jenny chuckled. "You're awful."
Draco kissed the top of her head. I believe that is what you like about me. He kissed her cheek and asked, Can I assume that you sent the boys away for the night?
Yes. Oh, I sent my babies to the Zabini Den of Iniquity.
Draco kissed her cheek and then whispered in her ear, It's been a long time since we've had the house to ourselves. Ginny looked up at him and said, Tell me my arse is still the same size.
Your arse is lovely, and it is still the same size.
Oh, I love you, Ginny said before she kissed him.
Blaise Zabini called out from the fireplace. I guess you talked your way out of another tight spot, Malfoy. Draco pointed his wand at the flue and turned it off without replying, and then smirked at his wife and said, I think we ought to start in the kitchen.
The End. Pretty as You Please by Nokomis. Ginny had known when she took the Aura exam that not every case she was assigned to would make the world a better place. She wouldn't always get to capture dark wizards or remove magical threats from the world or even comfort small children by rescuing their needles. However, she had never quite imagined that she would be reduced to being a referee.
I love that, Toad!
I just bet you did.
Ginny resisted putting her face in her hands because that would be unprofessional. She was in charge here. She could bring this situation under control. She really could.
Ferret face!
Toad lips.
This situation was wildly out of control.
Stop it, both of you!
She yelled, forgetting to use her aura voice and instead using her annoyed sister screech. They stopped it.
Okay. Calmly, and from the beginning, tell me what happened, Ginny said.
In response, she got sullen stares and silence.
Neither of you can tell me what happened?
Shuffling feet and indirect stares.
That's it. I'm leaving.
She was going to go find her partner and shake the illness right out of him, because if this was what happened when he called in and she had to go out solo for the first time in her career, she was never going out solo ever again. Draco Malfoy continued to glare down his nose at Neville Longbottom, who was shaking a trowel angrily at the looming plant that was growing up the side of the fence between their properties.
He trained it to eat toads! I'm sure of it!
Neville said, face turning even redder. Ginny tried desperately to remember protocol for these sorts of disturbances. She was reasonably sure she wasn't even the right department to be called out here. There didn't seem to be any danger here. She settled for at least trying to sound official.
To whom does the plant belong?
It's Longbottom's, Draco said.
I don't see how I can be held responsible for Longbottom's plant eating Longbottom's toad.
Because you turned it against me!
Neville snapped. Ginny couldn't recall ever seeing Neville so riled up and was mildly impressed. Ginny prodded at the plant with her wand. It snapped at her.
Are you quite sure that the plant ate the toad?
Two nods.
Whole or in bites?
Neville squeaked.
Whole, Draco replied.
And is the plant's digestive system immediately corrosive?
Ginny tried a spell to mellow the plant. It didn't appear to work as vines continued to flail.
Not immediately,
Neville said, sounding slightly hopeful.
Unfortunately, muttered Draco.
Why do you two live so close to one another anyhow?
Draco's stately estate was to the left, Neville's rickety country house to the right. There was a decent amount of lawn and shrubbery, as well as a large fence dividing the two properties, but clearly it wasn't enough.
I was here first, Neville grumbled.
I refuse to allow Longbottom to force me away from my estate, Draco said with an aristocratic hand wave.
Ginny rather thought he should just be glad he had an estate, all things considered. He had barely scraped through the war with any semblance of reputation intact, though somehow he had managed to maintain control of at least part of his family's fortune. "I'm sorry I asked," she said. She fidgeted with the sleeve of her Auror's robe. Maybe if she just disapparated really suddenly, they wouldn't notice.
"Well?"
She looked up at Neville, who was looking at her expectantly.
"What?"
she said guilelessly. It was time to admit that control had careened out the window on a firebolt, drop the veneer of professionalism, and just get this done with so that she could go back to the office and call her partner and make him pay.
"Malfoy, did you train the plant to eat toads?"
Ginny demanded, sticking her wand at his nose and narrowing her eyes like this was a real interrogation.
"No."
His eye twitched, just a little.
"Good to know. Stand back, Neville."
Neville stepped back quickly. Ginny cast a spell that split the plant in half, revealing a toad attempting to extricate itself from the goo. Neville let out a happy squeak. Draco scowled momentarily before turning to her.
"Well, now that that's done, I'll be on my way," he said.
"Not so quickly, Malfoy," Ginny said.
He smirked. Ginny felt immediately suspicious. She hadn't earned these robes by being dense, after all.
"Why did an Auror get called out on this case?"
His expression stretched to somewhere between a smirk and a grin.
"Malfoy," she began, "I'll have you know that my time is very important, and I do not..."
She didn't get a chance to finish the thought as she was swept up in his arms and had a kiss planted firmly on her lips. She flailed her arms a bit and pushed him away.
"What the hell was that?"
"Well, I went to considerable effort to get you here, and I had to make it worth it," he said calmly.
"By kissing me? You git!" Ginny snapped, then paused. "Wait, you're responsible for getting me here?"
Neville sidled away, toad clutched in his arms.
"Well, this is hardly a situation that requires an Auror," Draco said.
Neville squeaked like he wanted to protest on behalf of his toad, then thought better of it and continued his subtle escape.
"Explain yourself," Ginny said.
She wondered if a bat bogey hex would be utterly out of line.
"Not at all, considering," she convinced herself and raised her wand.
"You're adorable when you're fierce," Draco said, smirking at her wand tip.
"That's all I wanted to tell you. So, I got your partner to call in sick and convinced your boss to send you on this call."
He began to saunter away. Ginny stood in disbelief before running after him, yelling,
"Ew! You're a right wanker! You don't do that and walk away!"
He turned and raised his eyebrow. "I think I just did."
But, she protested. "I have a very important job. I'm a better asset to the magical community than you ever were. You aren't allowed to kiss me and manipulate me and then walk off as pretty as you please."
"What are you going to do about it?"
His smirk was a challenge. Ginny loved challenges.
"Just you wait and see," she said, watching his smirk widen as she disapparated with a faint pop.
She'd strike back when he least expected it, she thought, as she made her way back to her office. She touched her lips lightly. This was going to be fun.
Kissing Booth by Saria Okalani.
"Next," Harry said distractedly, staring over to the other side of the pitch at Hermione, who was smiling a bit too flirtatiously at Dean Thomas for his liking. There was a plunk of coins on the table, and then Lavender Brown had his face between her hands and was mashing her mouth against his.
"Mph,"
said Harry resignedly.
"Ow,"
he heard Malfoy yell beside him.
"Ow! Teeth! No biting! What are you, a vampire?"
Lavender finally pulled away to confer with Parvati, no doubt to compare his and Malfoy's kissing technique, and Harry saw Susan Bones giggling to herself as Malfoy scowled after her skipping form. "Am I bleeding?" he demanded. Harry peered closely at Malfoy's lips, but other than being a bit swollen from all the kissing he'd been doing, the skin was intact. "No," he said, looking a bit warily at the hulking form of Millicent Bulstrode as she seemed to be making her way to their booth. Harry heaved a sigh of relief as she passed them by. "This is ridiculous," said Malfoy for the 10th time in as many minutes. "It's degrading, kissing people for money. And for 10 sickles at that, a kiss from these lips are worth at least a galleon." Harry rolled his eyes. "You know, there's really not enough room in this booth for you, me, and your raging ego." "It's not ego, Potter. It's a simple fact. I'll prove it to you." Before Harry knew what the other boy was about, Malfoy had grabbed him and planted a kiss on his startled mouth. He wasn't sure he was particularly fond of Malfoy's aggressive style, but he did taste like peppermint candy and sure knew how to move his lips and tongue in very enjoyable ways. "Malfoy! Potter!" The two boys sprang apart at the strident voice of Professor Snape, who was glaring at them. Said Harry. Professor McGonagall was with Snape, and she looked at the two boys disapprovingly. "What is the meaning of this indecent display?" "We were providing a demonstration of what people might expect from us," Malfoy slotted in smoothly. "Advertising, you know. To encourage patrons." McGonagall raised a skeptical eyebrow, while beside her Snape bristled. "This is a charity event," he snarled. "Quit giving out freebies." "No one will buy the lemur if you give the milk away for free. Remember that, Mr. Malfoy," said McGonagall. After the professors had left, Malfoy turned to Harry. "Well?" he asked with an arched eyebrow. "Yeah, I'd give you a galleon for that," said Harry. Malfoy smirked. "That's what I thought. And I'd give you 2 nuts for your performance, you wooden mannequin. Unfortunately for you, that was a one-time deal to prove a point. No amount of money could induce me to kiss a four-eyed get-a-get."
"That was really hot," said Tracy Davis, dashing up to them.
She dropped 3 gold coins onto the table.
"The girls and I will give you this if you kiss again."
"No, what?" Harry began, but was interrupted by Malfoy's tongue. It was over nearly as soon as it began.
"Hey!" Tracy cried. "No fair! That barely lasted 2 seconds!"
Malfoy scooped up the coins and dropped them into their collection jar. "What's not fair? You set the terms, and we fulfilled it. It's not our fault if you weren't specific. Now away with you." Tracy scowled at them, but turned on her heel and went back to her friends, who looked equally disappointed and fascinated. Harry looked at him askance.
"It was for charity," Malfoy said regally.
All around them, people were enjoying the charity fair and the lovely day.
30 more minutes, Harry thought. I can do this.
They'd already been in the booth for 30 minutes. Every student was expected to contribute in some way. It had just been his and Malfoy's luck to have drawn the boys, or the girls, depending on how you looked at it, kissing booth.
"So," Harry said, trying to make conversation, "of all the people you've kissed so far, who's been the best?"
"Finch Fletchley wasn't bad," Malfoy said absently. "And Mandy Brocklehurst's tongue ring was interesting." Harry could tell that Malfoy really wasn't listening. The other boy's gaze was completely focused on the girls, or boys, depending on how you looked at it, kissing booth across the way. Harry followed Malfoy's line of vision and saw that Ginny was engaged in a rather enthusiastic kiss with Seamus Finnegan.
"Why don't you just tell her you like her?" Harry suggested.
Malfoy whipped his head around to glare at Harry.
"Who? Weasley? I don't like Weasley. I don't like her name or her hair or her eyes or her smile or her voice or the way she looks in a Quidditch uniform or the way she can't eat a pumpkin pasty without dropping crumbs everywhere so she has to lick the corners of her mouth. And I never, ever, ever think about her while looking at dirty magazines.
Who is that? Is that Kevin Entwistle? Isn't he gay?
Malfoy cried as Ginny's next customer bent down to kiss her.
Hermione caught Harry's eye and waved. Harry felt a little funny jump in his stomach as he waved back. Their relationship was so new, official only last week, and here they were kissing a bunch of other people already. Clearly, if they could survive this, they were going to be in it for the long haul. To Harry's surprise, he saw Ginny's eyes open as she was kissing Kevin to look at Malfoy. If he wasn't mistaken, when she closed her eyes again, she threw herself more energetically into the kiss. Harry could hear Malfoy's teeth grinding.
"Hello,"
said a shy-looking Hufflepuff third year coming up to their booth. She looked from Harry to Malfoy and back again.
"I don't know who..."
Malfoy plucked the money from her hand and pulled her in to be snogged. He did this quite earnestly, though Harry noted that his eyes were open and he was still glaring over at Ginny. Ginny, for her part, had moved on to Terry Boot. It appeared that she was quite popular with the Ravenclaw boys. In the next 15 minutes, Harry kissed 4 more people, but the true entertainment was in watching Draco and Ginny try to outdo one another with their kissing partners. He wanted to tell Malfoy to stop being such a ridiculous prat, but then Hermione, who he was pleased to note kissed very matter-of-factly and never used tongue, would smile at him, and he'd forget while his brain melted. It all came to a head when Blaise Zabini sauntered up to Ginny and took one of her girls between 2 of his fingers, pulling it taut and letting it bounce back as he released it. Harry turned to tease Malfoy some more, knowing that the other boy would turn blue and expire before he'd admit to being the least bit bothered by anything Ginny did, but to Harry's surprise, his boothmate was not there.
"Malfoy?" Harry asked uncertainly. Maybe he had expired, but no, there was no body on the floor.
Dismay creeping up his spine, Harry turned quickly and had his fears confirmed. Malfoy was striding towards the girls, or boys, depending on how you looked at it, booth, shoving unfortunate people out of his way. Harry vaulted over the booth and sprinted to Malfoy, pushing his glasses back up as they slipped during his dash.
"What are you doing?"
he asked, sounding a bit out of breath.
"Get out of my way, Potter," Malfoy snarled.
"I'm not in your way. I'm just off to the side here," Harry pointed out reasonably.
"Well, don't talk to me then.
I want to know what you're going to do."
"Bloody Ravenclaws, stupid Gryffindors, even ruddy Hufflepuffs," he heard Malfoy mutter. "But someone from my own house is just carrying it beyond the scope of reason."
Malfoy's rage sent 2 little first years scurrying. They ran as far as their little legs could carry them in the other direction. In another few strides, they had reached Ginny and Hermione's booth. Hermione raised an eyebrow in question at Harry, who shrugged and gestured toward Malfoy helplessly. He made the universal sign for "he's mad," and Hermione nodded in understanding. Ginny had crossed her arms and was studying Malfoy coolly.
"Yes? What is it, Malfoy?"
"I'm afraid you'll have to wait your turn. As you can see, I'm busy at the moment." Without a word, Malfoy pushed Zabini to the aside, then shoved his hands into his pocket and withdrew 2 handfuls of gold coins, which he showered unceremoniously onto the table. Before the last coin hit the table, he grabbed Ginny around the waist and dragged her forward as far as she could go, considering there was a booth in the way. He buried 1 hand into her thick red gold curls, angling her face up to receive his rough kiss. Harry heard Ginny sigh, but apparently she liked Malfoy's aggressive kissing style far better than he himself had.
"What brought this on?" Hermione asked curiously.
Harry leaned against the booth.
"Maybe he was tired of being an idiot."
"Well," said Hermione reasonably, "that's years of habit he'll have to get past." Harry nodded in agreement, taking 1 of Hermione's hands in his.
"Maybe the love of the right woman will help him," he said meaningfully, and kissed her hand gently.
Hermione considered this, then squinted at the still kissing couple. Or some Sirius can't be bothered to come up for air snogging.
Or that, Harry agreed.
The end.
The Different Days of Draco Malfoy by Hearts Cadence. Sometimes I think he doesn't even realize how he's acting, like his upbringing or whatever is just kicks in and that's it. Draco's conscious thinking ceases to exist. I know he tries, around me anyway, to be decent. Not necessarily good, but then I don't think I would think of him the way I do if he were any more respectable. I've come to love the Slytherin in him just as much as the rest, I think. But in any case, he tries to be an all right guy when it's only the two of us. Just sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Today was what I refer to as one of his cold days, where he treats me with nothing but indifference. He also has his loving days, which are brilliant and feature lots of touching and soft looks and whispers in my ear, and his lusty days, which, well, you know. And then there's the panicky days, where he starts thinking about the future and how he could never work in the real world and all that rot. And at least frequent but utterly sublime are the carefree days. And then it's just me and him in each other's arms, and all the rest just falls away. Surprisingly, he doesn't have jealous days. A lot of people assume that he's a very jealous person, but he's just not. Not even of Harry, which even I found a bit shocking at first. But anyway, today was one of the cold days, and it's absolutely infuriating when that happens. Personally, I think it's something of a self-preservation tactic, a built-in means of keeping his heart from getting bruised, or, scariest of all, broken. I also think that that's what most Slytherins are when you get right down to it. Scared, I mean. That's why they act so rude and arrogant and aloof so much of the time. It keeps people at a distance. And if no one ever gets close, they can't do much damage, can they? I'm getting sidetracked. Draco hates it when I try and analyze him and his mates anyway. He says he's just who he is and there's no reason why, and I'm just wasting my energy. I say he's afraid to find out something about his motives he'd rather not know. He says I have too much free time. Unless it's a loving or lusty day, in which case he uses his mouth in an entirely different way to silence me. There I go again. Losing my train of thought, that happens a lot. Draco jokes that maybe I should spend less time playing therapist to him and concentrate on my own issues. Maybe he's right, but that's neither here nor there. I was saying that Draco had a cold day. Those used to pop up quite often, actually, more than all the others combined. He improved so much, though, that my tolerance level for them dropped through the floor, so now I have quite a time coping with them when they do make an appearance. They infuriate me, to be honest, because we both know his feelings for me are anything but indifferent. But he likes to pretend sometimes, for different reasons. Sometimes it's just that warped survival instinct flaring up. Other times, something triggers it. Today, there was a trigger, and his name is Harry Potter. I already said that Draco isn't a jealous fellow, and I stand by it. He's not. He knows I'm mad about him and would never do anything to jeopardize us. That doesn't mean that certain things don't get him thinking, though, and when he starts thinking, well, that's when the trouble starts. Usually, it incites one of the panicky days, which are sadly becoming more and more frequent of late, but this time it was different. Harry caught up to me today after Quidditch, when I was still sweaty and admittedly very gross. I wasn't even a little bit in the mood to talk strategy, and even less eager to hear about the vagaries of finding yourself a third wheel when your two best mates decide to fall in love. Ron and Hermione, that is. But unlike Draco, who would have been able to tell him to shove off, I'm a nice person and forced to smile anyway. Hi, Harry, what's up? He panted for a couple of seconds from the run. I sort of pretended not to hear him for a while, so he had a bit of a jog, and said, "Hey, Ginny, I need to talk to you." Uh-oh, not good. That line was usually followed by a half hour of the "no one understands what it's like to be me" talk. My smile faltered, but held. "Sure," I managed through gritted teeth. "What about?"
He glanced around like he was looking for spies, then grabbed my elbow and proceeded to drag me, still completely in need of a shower mind, to the locker rooms. Once inside with the door safely shut, he explained,
"More private."
I sat down on a bench.
"Uh-huh.
Any particular reason we need privacy, Harry?" He mussed up his hair even more than usual, looking entirely uncomfortable. I'll admit it, my interest was thoroughly sparked by now. Hopefully not.
I felt my eyebrows go up. Something the matter?
No. Yes.
He sighed, all frustration, then plopped down on the bench across from me.
I heard a rumor.
Harry, people have been spreading rumors about you since first year. Don't you know how to ignore that yet?
He shook his head. No. About you.
I immediately went on my guard. Really? What is it? He leaned forward to rest his elbows on his knees, hanging his head and looking every bit the reluctant bringer of bad news.
It's got to do with Malfoy.
And the proverbial red flag went shooting up. It was about this point I knew that this was not going to be a pleasant conversation.
Oh?
Was all I could think to say. In retrospect, I probably should have come up with something at least slightly more intelligent. He lifted his head and stared at me through his glasses.
Don't you care what people are saying?
Ah, excellent opportunity for a retreat.
Not really, no,
I told him and started stripping off what gear I could and remain presentable.
Why not?
I brushed sweat-matted hair off my neck and made a face. Merlin, I really needed to clean up.
You know better than anyone how wrong people usually are.
He frowned, then seemed to brighten, probably thinking that was actually true, meaning the rumors most likely were not.
So it didn't happen.
I was almost tempted to say no, it didn't, and be done with the whole affair. Unfortunately, curiosity beat that inclination to a pulp, and I heard myself say,
"Well, I don't know the rumor, so I really can't say if it did or not, can I?"
He ruffled his hair some more, awkward and refusing to meet my eyes.
"They're saying someone saw Malfoy snog you outside the Great Hall, and that you snogged him back."
"Oh."
"Oh?"
That was obviously not the response he was looking for.
"Well, what do you want me to say?"
"That it's not true."
"Oh."
He blinked a few times.
"Well?"
I decided playing dumb was as good a way to stall as any.
"Well, what?"
"Is it?"
"Is it what? You're really not being very clear, Harry."
He stood up and turned around, bawling his fists, and I sort of started to suspect maybe I went too far.
"Did you or did you not snog Malfoy?"
he asked with impeccable enunciation.
"Outside the Great Hall?"
I literally cringed from how loud he shouted.
"You mean there's multiple instances?"
Note to self, learn how to think on one's feet, or even sitting on one's bum, or in any position, really.
Apparently, that was all the answer Harry needed, because almost right away, he spun around and stormed through the door.
Until today, I never actually saw someone storm before, but that's exactly what he did.
Not knowing what he had in mind, but positive that it could not be good, I jumped up and rushed after him. He was stomping off towards the pitch. The Slytherins were having their practice at the moment. Let's just say it did not require amazing powers of deduction to figure out his intentions.
"Harry!" I tried, but the call fell on deaf ears, and now he was running.
He reached the pitch just before me, cupped his hands around his mouth like a megaphone, and bellowed out, "Malfoy, get your arse down here!"
I finally caught up and groaned out loud, putting my hands through my hair, which was still all stiff and slick with sweat, reminding me that I never did get that shower. And thanks to Harry, the entire Slytherin Quidditch team, including my somehow always presentable boyfriend, was looking at me.
Lovely.
Just bloody lovely.
"Harry!"
I hissed.
"Let it go, all right? I'll explain, I swear. Just come on!"
I tried to tug him away, but it was like hauling one of those suits of armor in the entrance hall. Impossible, in other words.
Draco circled low on his broom, lazily, regarding us warily. He touched down.
Something I can do for you, Potter?
Then Harry tackled him. I swear, just like that. One minute, Draco was standing there, looking his proud and haughty self, and the next he was on his back with a very angry Harry swinging away on top of him.
What the hell?
Draco demanded, doing his best to shield his precious, unblemished face from Harry's fists. In my state of shock, I experienced this ridiculous urge to giggle, thinking that he would be so mad if his perfectly straight nose got bent or anything.
You piece of shit!
Harry roared, arms pumping at Draco in a frenzy. The plus side of being so out of control was that he wasn't bothering to aim, so not many of the punches landed on anything extremely vital.
How dare you touch her!
Ginny!
Draco shouted over Harry's ongoing tirade. Get him off now, or I won't be held responsible for my actions! That finally snapped me out of it, because I knew he wasn't lying, and I knew that Draco could do some serious damage, especially when he had the advantage of being clear-headed, if a little confused. I ran over and grabbed at one of Harry's arms, but it took all of my strength to just hold back the one.
Blaze!
I shouted to Draco's best mate, who stood by looking extremely amused by the entire spectacle.
Help me, damn it!
He seemed to consider at this a moment, and then shrugged and moseyed on over in no apparent hurry at all. Personally, I think Draco could use some new friends. He says the same thing to me, though, and I suppose it's not one of his friends attacking me, so he might actually have something there.
Grab his other arm,
I instructed Blaze, forced to yell over Harry, who was hollering something about my virtue at the time. Blaze frowned, probably thinking that it sounded far too much trouble when he was rather enjoying the show anyway, but I saw his chest rise and fall in a sigh, and he reached down and took hold of Harry's one steel flailing limb. Together, we managed to haul him off Draco, who rolled up with murder in his eyes. I believe my exact thought at the time was, oh dear. In a very quiet, controlled voice, which, to my shame, I couldn't help but find extremely sexy even under the circumstances, Draco said,
what the hell is going on?
Harry thrashed around a bit, but Blaze delivered him a sound cuff over the head, and that seemed to calm him down. He spat,
you snog Ginny!
Draco's eyes flicked over to me, and I could feel everyone else staring too, but I was really beginning to feel amazingly self-conscious of my grimy appearance. God, how embarrassing. I shrugged helplessly. Finally, apparently seeing I wasn't going to shed any light on the matter, Draco climbed to his feet with the grace I've always admired and envied in equal measure, and then said with deliberate calm, you're being ridiculous, Potter. Do you know how mad you sound? I really have to say, I was a bit disappointed. I mean, yes, Draco and I had agreed not to tell anyone except Blaze, and only because he walked in on us in a very, compromising position, which is just another story completely. But still, I guess I sort of had this fantasy where one day Draco would just stand up and declare his undying love to the world, and then we would have the whole ride into the sunset bit, like those Muggle Westerns. Completely ridiculous, especially since Draco still hasn't even declared that to me yet, so he won't be telling the world anytime soon, but a girl can dream. Anyway, he took the route of denial, which is really exactly what I should have expected, especially since we already told each other that's what we would do in the event something like this came up. We're both very pragmatic, you see. Harry wasn't buying it, though.
People saw you, Malfoy, and Ginny admitted it!
Draco gave me a look that could cut through diamonds. I threw up my hands.
I did not! What? I didn't! Not technically, anyway, and when dealing with Slytherins, the technicalities count for everything.
Blaze gave a half-snort, half-laugh that he quickly covered up with a very unconvincing cough. Draco glared. Harry seethed. I really, really wanted a shower.
Finally, Harry took this great big breath and gave me one of those looks that make me feel like I'm kicking a puppy or something when I lie to him. "Did you or did you not snog him?" Harry asked very carefully. I glanced at Draco, who inclined his head just the tiniest, almost imperceptible bit, as if to say, "You know what to do, just like we planned." And then I looked at Harry's chin because I couldn't do it looking him in the eye. "Harry, how could you think that I would actually touch him? I mean, it's Malfoy." He looked utterly confused, and little pink smudges of embarrassment colored his cheeks. I felt sort of bad for him, even if it was his own fault. But then I felt bad about that, too, because he only did it in the first place for me, thinking in his warped hero brain that I would somehow appreciate it. "But in the locker room..."
"I was just shocked that a rumor like that was going around," I lied. "I never said it happened, which it didn't. Honestly, Harry, Malfoy?"
Blaze smirked like there was no tomorrow, and I made a mental note to give him a good smack later. Harry finally started relaxing, so we let him go, and I looked over to see Draco giving me the oddest look. This mix of anger, annoyance, and resignation. I think that's when I really knew it was going to be a bad day. I wasn't sure yet which one of the bad days it would be, but I knew without a doubt that one of them was coming. I didn't find out until after supper, and after I'd finally washed up, thank goodness, that it would be a cold day. I waited for him outside the great hall, nervous as a girl on her first date, and when he finally walked out, I cleared my throat and raised my eyebrows at him. We both knew full well what this meant. Meet me in the spare, hardly used potions lab. He barely looked in my direction and didn't give me the obligatory nod before he moved on. I think I already knew he wouldn't show, but I made a trip to the lab anyway. I waited 20 minutes before I accepted the inevitable. It was a cold day, and he was going to be aloof and a royal pain in the arse. Clomping my feet loudly as I walked, I marched to the Slytherin common room. I am not a young woman easily deterred. I tapped their portrait, this truly hideous snake thing, 3 quick successive times, then gave 2 more drawn-out pounds, the code between Blaze, Draco, and I, to make sure it's one of them that answers, then jumped into the shadow of a truly convenient, if cramped, little alcove just to be safe. Sure enough, Blaze appeared in the entrance, stepped out, and closed it behind him again. He leaned back and crossed his arms. "Come out, little weasel," he called cheerfully. I did, scowling. "I don't want to talk to you, you utter prat," I promptly informed him. "Send out Draco." "Sorry, Draco's not in at the moment," he said, his voice like a muggle operator. "May I take a message, please?" "Not funny, Blaze," I snapped. "I'm serious. Go get him. I don't care about your best mate's code or whatever. I want to see him, and you will fetch him for me now." Blaze likes to talk tough, but he's really a big softy at heart, and he demonstrated then by pouting and obediently disappearing back into the common room. Draco came out a few minutes later and eyed me with cool detachment.
"Yes?"
I struggled to contain my temper, which is quite an accomplishment for someone in the Weasley line.
"You didn't meet me."
"Oh, sorry. Is that what you were getting at?"
I felt my jaw clench.
"You know it was, Draco."
He shrugged, then leaned against the wall opposite from me, well outside touching distance.
"I didn't pay much attention. Apparently, outside the Great Hall isn't a good spot. I thought at least one of us should practice some discretion."
"You snug me that day!" I exploded. "I don't even like public displays. You're the one that likes to show off."
"That's been hard for him since the start, I know. Not being able to flaunt his latest girl, I mean. He quite likes his reputation as a ladies' man, and the rest of the school thinking he's in a dry spell isn't easy on him."
He stiffened, but it flowed out of him almost immediately, and the bored posture returned.
"At least I'm not blabbing off to Potter." I wasn't blabbing. He heard the rumors. I paused. Did you know about that? There's rumors now, I mean.
Blaze said something of the sort. I really don't recall. Bullshit. But it was a cold day, after all, and his sayings, things like that were to be expected.
Did he say if it was the snogging one, or are there any more?
He looked at me as if I were a blathering idiot. I hate when he makes me feel stupid like that. Most people can't, as my self-esteem is, as Draco puts it, through the roof, but he has a knack for really making me feel thick sometimes.
I don't recall, he repeated slowly.
My patience for his games ran out right then.
Damn it, Draco, stop it. I know you do. What the bloody hell did he say?
Unlike Blaze, Draco, unfortunately, can't be bullied. My outburst didn't even faze him. In fact, if anything, it only encouraged him.
I think you need some rest, Jenny, he suggested. I closed my eyes and counted to 10.
I kept reminding myself that this attitude would pass, that it always did after a while, and tomorrow, or maybe even a few days later, depending, would probably even be a loving day to make up for it. It didn't help much, but enough.
Draco, I'm sorry about this afternoon, I said quietly. I tried to stop him. Well, you saw how he was.
Draco didn't say a word or give any indication of what he was thinking. I sighed. I knew from experience that if he was going to be difficult, then that was that, and it was best just to wait him out and pray.
I'm always secretly afraid that one of these times he won't get over it, that the mood will stick and it will all be over. But Draco is a boy that requires space, and I know better than to deny him that. Then it would end for sure.
I'm gonna go, I said. I just wanted to see you. Maybe we'll talk tomorrow or something.
I turned around, started to walk away, feeling completely depressed, wondered if any of the girls would be in the dormitory, and hoped not, and then stopped dead in my tracks when Draco called.
I'm tired, Jen.
I turned around, but took care not to step any closer. That might have compromised his breathing room and totally destroyed whatever made him open up in the first place. He really is ridiculously temperamental for a male.
Of what?
I asked carefully, feeling my stomach twist. Oh, this was it. He was going to tell me that he was sick of us, and he'd leave me, and I would drown my sorrows in vats of ice cream and become morbidly obese so no one would ever want to date me again, and I'll die an old maid. Oh, hell, he was coming closer now. I needed the space. I checked myself, forced myself to breathe, and managed to hold my ground. He stopped an arm's length away.
Of hiding like this, like it's something to be ashamed of. He said, you're right. I do like showing off when I'm dating a beautiful girl, but I can't do that, and I'm tired of it. I honestly don't think I can stand it anymore. Today pushed me too far.
I closed my eyes. I wished he would make it quick. Draco's not a nice person, but he's not sadistic either.
Why wasn't he just getting to the point? He's usually so good about that.
Jenny, look at me.
I did, reluctantly. He's so beautiful. I don't tend to think that about men, but Draco really is. Not in an almost homosexual pretty boy kind of way, and not even entirely in an aesthetic way, though I'll admit physical attraction was what started this whole thing off. But he's just got this air about him, this powerful magnetism that I can't describe, but I can't imagine surviving without.
Can you honestly tell me you're happy like this? He asked. Not being able to go out in public and lying to your friends, having to give me a look after supper just so we can meet because you don't want to risk being seen talking. That's all right with you.
I knew you saw that I wanted to meet you after supper, I whispered. He rolled his eyes.
Jenny,
I huffed. It's not the most ideal situation, no, I admitted, hating every word coming out of my own mouth, but I swallowed. I was about to put myself out there to risk my heart being trampled on and torn to pieces by a cold-hearted Slytherin. I could taste something sour in the back of my throat, and I swallowed again. I could tell that he saw.
but I think it's worth it if it means being with you. I think I love you, Draco.
There, I'd said it. Now I could break it off, and I wouldn't have any regrets. Mortified humiliation, but no regrets. I closed my eyes and waited. It was silent for a long, long time, but I still wouldn't open my eyes. That would have led to tears, you see, and Draco has still yet to see me cry. I vowed that his breaking up with me would not be the first time for that particular milestone. At long last, I heard him say,
"All right. So, what are we going to do about this?" I opened my eyes.
"Huh?"
"Well, there's this incredibly ravishing redhead in love with me, and when that happens, a bloke doesn't go keeping her in the shadows. Especially when the bloke happens to love her back."
In that second, time stopped, and the floor dropped out from under me while my head swam and my stomach flipped, but all I could do was stare because Draco Malfoy had just said he was in love with me.
You love me?
I finally managed to squeak.
He nodded grimly, stepping forward to grab my hand and yank my stunned ragdoll body into his.
Every last bit. Temper, stubbornness, giggles, and psychoanalyst tendencies and all.
So of course I giggled, and he rolled his eyes because he hates it when girls giggle. But he smiled a little too, and he said he loved my giggles, so I didn't worry about it. And then I put my hands on either side of his face, looked him straight in his silver blue eyes, and said, "I am in love with you, Draco Malfoy." And then I smiled because there's just too much happiness and relief in me to hold it in any longer, and I let my head fall back and laughed. I heard him making the scoffing sound, and then he mumbled, "Silly girl." But when I lifted my head to defend myself, he was kissing me, and I sort of forgot what I was going to say anyway.
So now we're out by the lake, under this humongous oak tree facing the water, and well in view of every student on the grounds. I am curled in Draco's lap, and he has one of his hands on my thigh, and the other one tracing little swirls on my stomach beneath my shirt, occasionally tickling me, quite on purpose, I'm sure. Sometimes I reach up and kiss him, short and sweet, but just because I can, and every once in a while, his lips brush the top of my head. People are gawking, but we let them. We are in love. The end.
Hey, y'all, this is Persephone 33, and I hope you enjoyed this month's podcast. Special thanks go to Cinnamon Badge for hosting this month. The infirmary wouldn't fit onto this month's podcast. It made it way too long. So it will be available on the audio fix in the wireless page on dracoandjinny.com. Don't forget to go to one of the podcast suggestion threads on the forums and let me know what you'd like to hear, both for audio fix and podcasts. I hope everyone has a great July, and I'll see you next month. Bye-bye.